So rebirth in the forest, and now let's talk about rebirth in the sea. With spring on its way, I was thinking about the fish that start to come out of the water this time of year, and so I wanted to talk to the seafood scholar Barton Seaver. But since he just wrote a massive, definitive guide to American seafood, it turns out that our chat could not be contained by one mere season. In fact, Seaver needed to bring us all the way back to the beginnings of America to talk about how our tastes for fish have changed over time.
Well, America's relationship with seafood is utterly fascinating in that it was the first economy upon which this country was founded and upon which we took our first steps towards economic and political freedom. I mean, yes, it was religious freedom that drew the first few settlers here, but it was really the economics, and a lot of that drawn off of the backs of cod and those who fished them in the northwestern Atlantic that really provided that first sort of siren call. But funny enough, eating seafood has always been somewhat beneath our aspirations. And this sort of starts off with a quote from William Bradford, the first governor of Plymouth Colony, back in 1623 in a plaintive letter back home. He writes, "If ye land afford ye bread, and ye sea ye'll do fish, rest you while contented. God will one day afford you better fare." There was a real trepidation, but also just a real bias against this. And despite the fact that we came here seeking religious freedom, we didn't necessarily bring with us a lot of religious tolerance. And in the Catholic calendar, there's over 150 fast days at that time that required the devout to abstain from meat. And so seafood was first off seen as a food of the Catholics, which are from our Protestant beginnings was, you know, they were the others. And throughout our history of immigration, which is the story of America, oftentimes these new waves of immigrants were coming from cultures where seafood was a mainstay of the cuisine. Mm-hmm. And further, when we hit World War I, World War II, you know, there are all these campaigns to save meat, eat fish. They feed themselves, you know, to save the products of the land so that we can send them over to the boys overseas. And so Victory Gardens was one means to sort of inspire the citizenry, but seafood also became a food and asset to victory. The problem with that, though, is that once the seasoning of patriotism was removed with the clanging bells of armistice, our preference for seafood again sort of diminished. And so there's sort of been this history of seafood being seen as a penance or something you do for sacrifice. And that's also borne out in the fact that we've only ever eaten about 15 pounds of seafood per person per year in this country. Mm. And compare
like
that to
like chicken.
Over 200 pounds, 225 even, of meat, beef, pork, chicken, and lamb, turkey. It's just not our preferred food.
It is obviously cultural. You know, I certainly come from a culture that really reveres seafood. And as I understand it in your history, there are definitely fish that have become extremely popular through the years, but then like the subject of fashion. So what are some reasons that certain fish might become popular, and why do some fish stop being delicious to us?
Well, first, when we're talking about wild fisheries, this is nature. There are fluctuations. And so some seafoods like bluefish, which sort of bears the albatross of sort of widespread disdain. Bluefish was once an incredibly popular, very important, very valuable seafood that just disappeared from the waters, not necessarily because of overfishing, but just because of sort of decadal fluctuations in population biomass. And part of the shifting in preference for seafood is that really before the early 1900s, seafood was caught by small boat regional fisheries. With the exception of the North Atlantic fleet that was really catching this abundance of cod, small boat fleets, whether it was the Greek fishery for shrimp, octopus, sponge even, which they didn't eat, out of Florida, whether it was the Portuguese coming out of Bedford in areas a little bit south, the Chinese immigrants that settled along the West Coast that brought with them their own preferences, fishing methods, even boat design, the Chinese junk, it was called. And so during this phase, preference was based on regional availability. But after the early 1900s, when technology really took over, when the diesel engine allowed massive nets to be towed through the water to indiscriminately catch whatever was in its path, The small boat fishery never was to regain prominence in the economy of fishing, and we've ever more moved towards just sort of a very limited scope of species.
I mean, some of these individual species have some pretty crazy stories about why they became popular one day and not the next. Can you tell us about tilefish?
Yeah, tilefish was discovered in the late 1800s by a captain named Captain Kirby, who was fishing in deeper waters than was normal, doing an experimental fishery. And up came about 5,000 pounds of tilefish, a fish never before seen. And they immediately sent one down to the galley and cooked it up, and everyone present declared it to be one of the finest fish they'd ever tasted. And so this new discovery was brought to the attention of the American public. Captains began targeting it, and it became the darling of the culinary scene in America. In much the same way that, like, Patagonian toothfish, also known as Chilean sea bass, or orange roughy, suddenly found these, you know, sort of astronomical rise to the top of every menu, so too did tilefish. But what's amazing is 3 years later, just 3 years later, there was an event that happened where there was an inversion of cold water, it's believed, that trapped all the tilefish and killed them. And this is a naturally occurring event. And steamships going back and forth from Europe, from Boston all the way down through Norfolk, reported passing through tens of square miles of ocean completely covered in dead tilefish. And it was decades before tilefish was seen again in the fisheries, and it was further decades before it was of any abundance. But by the time it returned to market, well, it had fallen from our graces, and we had moved on to new favorites, and tilefish has never regained the popularity it once enjoyed.
As you said, there are so many biomass fluctuations and changes of water currents that can cause a population of fish to explode or decrease, but that also gets me thinking about seasonality. Most fish do have seasons, right?
Absolutely. Coming up into spring, as we are right now, there's a lot of attention being paid to seafood. Why? Well, going back to the beginning of this conversation, Lent. I mean, this is when most seafood is eaten in America, this and right around Christmas. You know, this is when the waters come alive. This is when the waters warm and masses of fish began to make their migration toward shore, oftentimes to spawn. And then to begin their sort of summer's long predatory indulgences that fattens them towards fall. And and this is an exciting season, but not necessarily one that offers us the best quality fish.
Right, because they've already spent a lot of the fat that they built up over the winter.
Exactly. Well, and one of my favorite fish, mackerel, which I fish quite a lot in my harbor, has been described in spring as slack in richness, stale in flavor, and wretched skeletons at their worst. Whoa. Okay.
That's cold, man.
I know. Well, their fat content can drop down to as low as 2%, whereas in their fattest form, they're up to over 20% fat in that richness and the luxuriousness. That's not to say they're not worth eating, but then there's other species that come into our culinary canon in the spring that are the pinnacle of things that we celebrate. On the East Coast, we have the striped bass. Over in the Pacific Northwest, we have, you know, up in Alaska, the Copper River salmon, you know, America's most famous sort of branded provenance of fish. Yeah. You know, and that happens about May 15th every year or so, that fishery opens up. So there's a lot of things in spring to really celebrate. Shad roe, shrimp opens up down in the Gulf. There's a lot there, and it only gets better through the summer.
Right. All right. Thanks a lot, Barton.
Thanks, Francis. Great talking to you.
Barton Seaver is the author of American Seafood, and he left us with a recipe for shrimp al ajillo. It's Spanish garlic shrimp. You can find it at splendidtable.org.